Absolute benediction. Om again. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasani Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama revolutions they've had a taste, and now it's being diminished due to economic decline, higher taxes, whatever. They totally flip out, and they're the ones who cause the commotion. Just like in India, there's this fear. Whenever I go to India, devotees tell me, what will happen if the masses don't have anything? Yet they're watching on TV and they're seeing all this opulence, which can never be theirs. What will happen if some demagogue agitates them? In mass, they storm the government, they storm the shops and industries. Oh, there'll be great commotion. But actually, according to the latest social research, the real worry is not the poor. The real worry is the new middle class. Because they have tasted. But then, what they're tasting is yanked away. Just like now in India, because of more stringent economic atmosphere, people's purchasing power has declined. The new middle class is not able to consume as they did before. In other words, when you rise up and become the new middle class, your expectations are partially fulfilled and you have more expectations. But the greatest fear in life is what? Falling back from what you already have. So those are the ones who cause the commotion, the new middle class. In other words, their desires are being denied. And this cannot be tolerated, especially since you have a taste of your desires being partially fulfilled. So this shows you something about the nature of the lust-anger cycle. What does Krishna explain in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita? First, you contemplate the objects of the senses. Jayatokasha Pusa. Then, from that contemplation, attachment develops. And then, from attachment, lust develops. The lust develops in such a way that you can no longer discriminate needs from wants. That's the great benediction of society today. If you want something, that means you need it. Whereas traditionally, needs were things like food, water, some kind of shelter, some kind of cloth to wrap around you. Now, needs are whatever you want. If you want it, you need it. So obviously that kind of mentality, when it meets frustration, and it must meet frustration, will cause great havoc, individually and collectively. So Krishna points out that when there is lust, there must be anger. Now you might say, why? And of course, so-called human civilization today, they will say, lust is just something that happens of its own accord. It's just an expression of the human spirit. It shows vitality. It shows energy. In the Western world, people will compliment you. You have such a lust for life. I don't know, maybe someone's told you that. You show such vitality. You're so full of desire. And of course, employers, they want to see that in the persons they hire. The human resources administrators, when they interview someone, they want to see, do you have this lust to get ahead? How much do you have this lust to want more and more? Because if we see you're lusty, then we know you're going to work hard to fulfill your life. I often tell the story of one devotee. don't see the qualities necessary. We don't see those Kali Yuga qualities, which are vital for human runners. But since you've been recommended by your previous authorities, we will accept you. So then once he was accepted in the PhD program for internet technology, the head professor to impart some Dimpya Gyan, divine knowledge to him. She felt compassionate upon him. You're very mild, you're very self-controlled, you're doing all your research very nicely. Because the research actually that's done at the PhD level is it's a cheap way for multinational corporations to get some problems solved. So what they do is, instead of paying someone in their own laboratories to do the research, instead they say, we are so charitable, we'll give this university some money, because we support higher education. And then the university understands that they have to engage PhDs in solving the multinational's problems. So it's a cheap way. It's all money. Even though they call it PhD, it's all about getting the labor done more cheaply. So the head of the PhD department, she took a liking to him. You're a nice young man. But let me tell you, you don't understand how the world works. It's not so much what your actual performance is. It's all about who you know. So therefore, you've got to not simply do your PhD work. You need to socialize, go to academic conferences. And what is the main point, she told him, of academic conferences? Drinking. The research must be there, but that is secondary, tertiary. The number one thing is drinking together. And in this way, human knowledge advances. So you see that in today's society, controlling your mind and senses is not valuable. People want to see lust. They want to see that you're ready to slave for lust, because then they know you'll work hard, you'll advance the mission of the employer. In other words, people do not understand the destructiveness of lust. They consider lust to be an honor. And they're raising their children in that way. Oh, now you are 13 or 14. Very good. Now you can really open up to what life is all about. What do you expect parents to say? They grew up thinking like that, so they want to pass the benediction to their children. Just be lusty in an appropriate way. That is considered civilization. What is Krishna teaching us in Bhagavad Gita? That where there is lust, there must be wrath. We need the education, the transcendental education, to see that. Why must there be wrath following lust? Because the material desires can never be fulfilled satisfactorily. You only get the promise. be any place for lust which is less strong than wrath? So we would ordinarily think that the main problem is lust. And indeed, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. Nevertheless, there's something stronger than even the lust, which must follow the lust, and that is anger. So it is a great lesson for us to understand that material desires can never be satisfactorily fulfilled. This is torture. So you're wondering, well then, why do we have these desires if they're never going to be satisfactorily fulfilled? These desires are the symptom of our disease. Because of that disease, we enthusiastically volunteer for, do you know what Chinese water torture is? Yeah? Chinese water torture. What they do is they strap you to a bed and then they have a water tap over your head. Out from the water tap comes one drop, one drop, one drop. Just now you may say, "Oh, what's the problem with that?" But if it just goes on and on, hours after hours, days after days, it drives you crazy. It's just one drop of water hitting your head, another drop. You actually just become totally disoriented. So that is what the attempt to fulfill material desires. We're signing up for that kind of water torture. But we don't see it that way, just like we think, what's wrong? What's the big deal about water torture? Just a drop of water constantly falling on your head, one after another. It's not the best thing in life, but it's not the worst. So similarly, we think that about material desires. Not the best thing, but not the worst. It's something you have to go through. But we don't see the torture that such desires bring about. So, I was once explaining at a Bhagavatam class in Mumbai at this kind of college. There are two approaches to lust. Material desires. The Western approach and the Indian approach. The Western approach is Kama Sindhu. Just drown in the ocean of lust. You see the ocean there, just plunge in deeply without hesitation. Just lose yourself in the ocean. And the Indian approach is the Kama Bindu. One drop at a time. Don't overdo it, but have a steady trickle. This is more civilized. This is more. This is more culture. Oh, but those people in the West, they just overdo it. So in both cases, no one is disputing the whole issue of lust. It's simply, how do you go about it? Do you drown in it, or do you have a steady one bindu after another? Neither is accepted in Bhagavatam. As pointed out in the seventh or ninth canto, steady drops of ghee on the fire. What effect do they have on the fire? The fire just blazes even more. So therefore we need to understand whether it's the Kama Sindhu approach or the Kama Bindu approach. We need to get to the roots of the whole problem. Because there must be anger either way. When we look at the world situation, we see that get more and more of what they want, and they'll be satisfied with their leaders, they'll be satisfied with their situation. This, of course, is a complete illusion. The more you agitate people's material desires, the more angry they become. There is no such thing as world peace through sense gratification. That is what today's consumer societies are propagating. The more you buy, the more you purchase, the more you seek fulfillment through consumerism, the more you'll be peaceful. Now, the more angry you must become. And therefore, the fire of war explodes from time to time, and no one can figure out the cause. They think the cause of wars is some dispute in which both sides cannot solve. Actually, the cause of war is material desire, which cannot be satisfactorily fulfilled, and therefore there is anger. So war is a manifestation of anger, which comes from unfulfilled material desires. That means whether the war is between two nations or more, or war in a relationship between husband and wife, friend and friend. Just try to understand the anger that rises in you when someone doesn't meet your expectations. It's intolerable. You shake with anger. After all I've done for you, after all I've tolerated from you, after all I've sacrificed for you, yet you have not fulfilled me satisfactorily. So war can happen in many ways, not simply between nations. Strife, anger, rancor, it is a daily occurrence where the gratification of material desires is considered an honor. Considered a benediction. Yet Bhagavad Gita says that having a material body is a disease, and seeking to fulfill that material body furthers the disease. Therefore, again, the yogi is one who acts with body, mind, and intelligence simply for the purpose of purification. We want to become cured. We regret our karmic past, how it has scarred us with so many artificial desires which can never be fulfilled. People go to the movies, whether it's Bollywood or Hollywood, and they see so many things on the movie screen. They begin to think that, yes, this is what life is like. When will I get what I see on the movie screen? And of course, because they're not going to get what's on the movie screen, because what's on the movie screen is that, the people become angry in their relationships. They don't say, or sometimes they do say, I know cases where persons do say, I want a relationship like in the movies. You're not giving that to me. Mostly they don't say, but this notion is embedded in the consciousness. It must be. They see so much movies, so much TV. You think that just, goes over their head? No, it goes inside the head. And forms the core reality, their core internal reality. So this verse in Bhagavatam is recognizing the anger problem. We spoke about how great stalwarts like Lord Shiva become angry if someone seeks to agitate their material desires. What a different standard of civilization. Today, you become angry if no one seeks to agitate your material desires. You feel your life is a failure. What's going on? We spoke yesterday about Narayan Rishi, how Indra became afraid of the penances done by Narayan Rishi. austerities are becoming so intense, you can take my post. Hinduism anxiety, showing that even in the heavenly planets, the Lord of Heaven has worries, has anxieties. So Indra knew exactly what to do. He dispatched Cupid, accompanied by heavenly planet girls, to allure Narayan Rishi. But when they got in the presence of Narayan Rishi, as we explained yesterday, they were overwhelmed by the gravity of Narayan Rishi, and they began to realize, we have made a mistake. We have been sent on a mission that is completely improper. This Narayan Rishi is not an ordinary person. They realize that. Yet, did Narayan Rishi become angry at these accommodating and his associates who were seeking to agitate his material design? No. He spoke very sweetly to them. You come to my ashram. That's very nice. I should offer something to you because you come to my ashram. Completely cool and transcendental. I'll give you something. Watch this. And from the body of Narayan Rishi emanated countless beautiful women of all varieties. Just emanated from his body. In other words, it's just like you try to tempt the devotee who makes the milkshakes for the deity. After the milkshakes are offered, you try to tempt the devotee. Would you like a milkshake? I see no sweets, I reward you. Similarly, how can you tempt the source of all beauty? That's what Bhagavan means, the source of six opulences unlimitedly. So Narayan Rishi showed, how can you tempt me with some heavenly planet girls? Look what's coming from me. Countless ladies, much more beautiful, which put all you beauties from the heavenly planets to shame. Match it. And indeed, Cupid and his associates, the heavenly planet girls, they felt ashamed. The girls felt, our beauty is nothing compared to what's emanating, the beautiful girls emanating from the form of Narayan Rishi. And remember how hospitable Narayan Rishi is. You're in my ashram, I must offer you something. So he told the demigods, you see all these ladies coming, emanating from me? Pick whichever one you want. You can have it. So this is how cool and transcendental the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. He was not angry because Indra sought to agitate his material desire. He has no material body. There was another occasion when Indra became paranoid. Complex character, Indra. He became paranoid about the great sage Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi, in his ashram on the northern side of the Himalayas, was performing severe austerities for the period of 6 manvantaras, 6 reigns of Manu. So by the time the reign of number 7 Manu came, Indra was very worried. This has gone on too long. This is too much. He's going to take my post. So Indra, again, knew what to do. He called for his team. Kamadev, not simply Kamadev, Cupid, but also Indra sent along with Kamadev, Spring, and he sent along musicians, singers, dancers, all very beautiful, and their goal was one, sunshine plus pleasant breezes. Oh, this is heavenly. Like in Hawaii. For all of us, if there's any place on earth that's like the heavenly planets, is Hawaii. So every afternoon in Hawaii, a sea breeze blows containing droplets of moisture. Very pleasing to the senses. So that's what Indra sent. He's in meditation, Mark and Aries. And then this beautiful breeze is blowing, caressing breeze, droplets of water, and also carrying the scent of sandalwood. I remember, attack number two, Indra also saw, he sent springtime. Springtime inspires everyone to wake up your senses. It's time to enjoy even more. You might have gone a little dormant during the winter. Is it like that in Melbourne? When is spring? Not September? Yes. So you feel proud of yourself. You survived the cold of the winter. Now spring is coming. Actually, spring is nice because it doesn't get hot like it's supposed to get hot today. So springtime means the awakening of your senses. They become more alive. This particular spring that Indra sent acted on the night. It produced the most beautiful spring night. Even though it was nighttime, all the flowers were blossoming, the creepers and vines were becoming luxurious. Remember, the breeze is blowing. The moon is shining brilliantly in the sky. Springtime, springtime. And then what else? There were musicians playing beautiful music. There were dancers, dancing girls. All this was thrown at Markandeya Rishi. But that wasn't all. There was a particular Apsara, heavenly planet girl. And she was extraordinarily beautiful. Extraordinarily beautiful form she had. And the form was covered just by a thin piece of cloth. So while springtime is there attacking Markandeya Rishi, the breezes, the luxurious flowers and creepers, and the musicians, and then the dancing girls, there was this special heavenly planet girl, thinly covered by a cloth, and she was bouncing a ball. Moving her body in such an alluring way. While all this other stuff is going on, and then suddenly a breeze blows and the thin cloth is blown away. Cupid was waiting for that moment. Right at that moment. Because Cupid, as the girl started to dance, right before the breeze blew her thin cloth away, Cupid had ready his arrow on his bow. He was waiting. So when the breeze blew off her thin cart, blew off her thin garment, then Cupid, it's a Markandeya Rishi. The arrow of Cupid has five heads. And these five heads of the arrow of Cupid will teach you something about the nature of material desire. What are the five heads of Cupid's arrow? Bewilderment, agitation, suffering, becoming dried up, and exhilaration. So if you can understand that, you see how the lust works. It seems like you become exhilarated, you become lively, but there's the other four parts of the arrow. Suffering, agitation, bewilderment, drying up. So this is what drives people crazy about expressing their lusty desires. They want just the exhilaration. The exhilaration offers so much promise, so much hope. But then, don't forget the other four arrowheads. You have to take the whole package. An example Srila Prabhupada gives is sweet rice. Everyone knows what sweet rice tastes. but sweet rice mixed with sand. So you lift up the cup of sweet rice. Especially if the sweet rice is cooked very slowly. And it's done with milk straight from the cow. And, so, and also the sweet rice is cold. Oh, it's so glorious. So you're tasting the sweet rice. Oh, this is going to be so nice. But then what? Crunch, crunch, crunch. It's got sand in it. So you're hooked on the flavor of the sweet rice. The sand. You want to get beyond the sand. So you keep drinking. I'll just drink more and this crunch will go away. I'll get past the sand. I must drink more. It tastes so good. But crunch, crunch, crunch. Very frustrating. So that's what Cupid's arrow does. It's 5 minutes. It's not just the exhilaration. You have to take the other four arrowheads too. Suffering, agitation, bewilderment, becoming dried up. You can study this situation, you can save yourself so much trouble. So Cupid, fire is 5 minutes out. What was Marcadea's reaction to all this? This whole production, springtime, breezes, scented with sandalwood, droplets of water in the breezes, musicians, dancing girls, and this special heavenly planets girl who's now totally unclad, moving before him. Marcadea Rishi started to become affected a little bit. He started to become, he noticed material desires are starting to rise in me. So immediately he became angry. How dare them try to agitate material desires in me? But he controlled that lust and anger. It was just minuscule, tiny, and he totally controlled it. His first reaction, he was starting to get angry. How dare you disturb me? How dare you try to pollute me? Seeing his self-control, all these factors that Indra sent to attack Marcadea Rishi, the musicians, the dancers, ordinary personality. Then Narayana Rishi came and approached Marcadea Rishi, and Marcadea Rishi offered prayers to Narayana Rishi. The Supreme Personality Godhead came because he was very pleased by the response of Marcadea Rishi, who controlled both lust and anger. So again, this is a very important concept for us. These greatest of personalities, if they're going to be angry, they're angry at someone trying to agitate their material desires. But even better than that is to be neither lusty nor angry. It is pointed out in the purport how the Supreme Personality Godhead is Aptakama. One who can fulfill his desires by himself. That is what it means to be completely independent. But how can we say we are independent? We are relying on so many living entities to help fulfill our desires. And therefore we get angry because they disappoint us, even though we have to rely on them. You become angry at your children. Why aren't your children fulfilling your expectations? You become angry at your husband or wife. You cannot go through material life without being angry because you must be unfulfilled. You must be disappointed. But the Supreme Personality Godhead, Bhagavan, relies on no one. actually understand the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we must understand that Krishna has desire, but he's completely independent in fulfilling his desire. Therefore, he's never frustrated. He never goes outside of himself. This is what it means to be Om Purna, perfect and complete. You know, Isha Upanishad is stated, Om Purna Mada Purna. The Supreme Absolute is perfect and complete, and even though so many complete units emanate from him, still he remains perfect and complete. This understanding must be there about the science of the Supreme. Another terminology is given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He wants you to understand that the real qualification of Bhagavan is not simply to be the controller. That understanding, Ishvar Parma Krishna, Bhagavan as controller, is a preliminary understanding. But beyond that is a deeper concept, a deeper understanding. That the Supreme Absolute Truth has unlimited desires and the unlimited resources and abilities to satisfy all of his unlimited desires. So I often point out, how many desires do you recognize you have? It's hard to get up to 10. Just try now. I want a nice house. I want nice children. More income, I want a better car, okay. I want nice personal happiness and gratification. All right, you're up to 5 now. Then what? Okay, for my mother, father, and extended family, I want things for them. And then what? Okay, world peace, good economy. It's hard to get up to 10, isn't it? So therefore, we don't understand what it means to have unlimited desires. But that is Bhagavan. We are tiny samples of Bhagavan. Krishna has unlimited desires, and he has the unlimited means to fulfill all of his unlimited desires. That is God. So Chaitanya Charitamrita describes this ability of Swaraja Lakshmi, to be completely independent in fulfilling unlimited desires, to be totally self-reliant. So that is a higher understanding of the science of the Supreme than simply accepting Krishna as the ultimate controller. We can take this a step further. In our endeavors to enjoy in this material world, there must be futility. We must fail, and therefore we're angry. Why must we fail? Because we have a limited capacity as an enjoyer. We are part of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer. Because we are part, we also have an enjoying tendency, but it's tiny. If you can grasp this, you'll see where all the frustration is coming from. Our ability to act as the enjoyer is so tiny, and that's where the frustration comes. We don't have a big enough capacity to enjoy. But we never realize that. Therefore, we blame the other person, blame society. But the real issue is our constitutional position is to be the enjoyer. Only because we are part of Bhagavan do we have a slight enjoying capacity. But that enjoying capacity only functions properly when it seeks to give enjoyment to Krishna. But when we independently try to act on our enjoying capacity, we suffer because it's too tiny. In other words, we're impotent, we're incompetent in terms of trying to enjoy it. By our constitutional position, we don't have what it takes. So how many lifetimes is required for us to understand? So in this way, Sri even when he seems to be angry. Even when he marries 16,108 wives. Everyone benefits. Transforming material attachment and lust into real love. That is done through the medium of devotional service. You must be attached to someone or something. That's the nature of consciousness, to be attached. So the bhakti process takes all that attachment potency and connects it to Krishna's service. We need to develop a thirst, Trishna, for devotional service. Seva Trishna. That means our spiritual health is returned. We should always think, I don't have enough devotional service. And we beg Krishna's devotee, please, I know I can do more. I don't see how I can do more, but I know I can do more. Please show me. That's the attitude of a devotee who skillfully wants to transfer the attachment from Maya to Krishna. As soon as we begin to limit our service, that means we are limiting our wealth, we are limiting our happiness. Devotional service is the methodology for transferring attachment from illusion to pure love. Although Arjuna was fighting a battle, that is perfect love because his attachment is to carry out Krishna's desire. Yes, it is true that from the viewpoint of ordinary morality, Arjuna was right to fight the battle. His family had been attacked, murder plots against his family, his wife had been publicly embarrassed. Extreme way. So he had a right to fight. But the real dynamic of Arjuna's fighting in Kurukshetra was he's doing it out of attachment for Krishna because it's what Krishna wanted. We need devotional service. The more we get, the better. The different ashrams have different styles of engaging in devotional service, but devotional service is the engine room of bhakti. Bhakti is not just belief. I believe in Krishna. I believe in devotional service. No. How are your senses and mind actively investing in devotional service? So a devotee never makes the mistake of minimizing devotional service. you do have capacity to learn how to balance things better. That is divine intelligence that allows you to see these things. But we'll never get that divine intelligence if we have this attitude, oh, reduce your service, too much service. We're beggars. I don't have enough service, Krishna. And what I do have, I'm not doing as best as I can. Please give me intelligence how to do properly the service I have and how to do more. I don't see it, but you help me to see it. That is bhakti. Anything else? Yes?
Like how we read, even the advanced devotees, though they don't have lust, they seem to have anger.
Advanced devotees don't have lust, they seem to have anger. Can you give an example? Shiva is special category. He's neither God nor living entity. Special tattva, Shiva tattva. Okay, you can use him as example because this verse is saying great stalwarts like Lord Shiva. But just bear in mind that Shiva is special. So, your question is?
So, how can we overcome anger in ourselves?
How do you overcome anger? Recognize that anger is, as the Bhagavatam points out, the younger brother of desire. When there's an anger problem, there is a desire problem. But as the verse says about Krishna, there's no material desire in Krishna, therefore there's no anger. You solve the anger problem. Yes. Yes. Commented that anything can be tolerated in good association. the advantage of the bhakti community. For all the ashramas, it offers support, encouragement, camaraderie. So the householders should discuss amongst themselves how, in amidst their busy schedule, they can support one another. And then you'll all come up with the solutions to handling the ever-increasing workload of today. The older, more expert householders should give advice to the younger ones. I spoke yesterday about how there's a tendency in household life to try and reinvent the wheel. And now I've got my home, I've got my family, it's my ship, I'll steer it my way. And even others, I've been told this, because I don't have personal experience, but I've been all over the world on every continent, so I've seen it for 40 years. I've been told that, especially when devotees are courting to marry, sometimes they don't listen to advice because they all say the same mantra. Those who are in this group say the same mantra. Okay, that happened to you, but for us it'll be different. All right, you had that experience with your wife, but we are different. That's your experience. So many say like that. In the West, they just say it point blank. Probably in India, they have a more indirect way of saying it. Just do whatever they want. So this is what you're dealing with. The reinvention of the wheel. So it's best that there is counseling for couples who are aspiring to marry. They should understand the whole situation. And after marriage, there should be support groups with householders who can help you not go through the same problems. You don't want to just have persons go through rerun movies. The same thing over and over again. So they need help from the older householders how to cross over this ocean. So the more you have community support, success will be there. And yes, sometimes you just have to cry out to Krishna, I don't see any way out of this. I have to work, but the work is demanding so much. But if you pray to Krishna, I want to make my spiritual life my number one priority. If you make that desperate prayer constantly to Krishna, there'll be results. But if you just give up, impossible. Oh, lurking, chanting 16 rounds, going to the temple. Oh. And you forget to cry out to Krishna. Then where is your shelter? So when the going gets tough, that's the time to have even more motivation in calling out to Krishna. Actually, we should call out to Krishna all the time. But we can take the toughness as a blessing in that it's forcing us to call out to Krishna, just as Queen Kunti said in First Canto Bhagavatam. The catastrophes are making me call out to Krishna, therefore they're not catastrophes. One devotee wrote a poem, oh my God, but he wrote a poem that one step toward Krishna in humble crying out is worth 10 steps toward Krishna in pride. So sometimes we're feeling so much pressure. If we forget to call out to Krishna, if we forget that Krishna is the protector of his sincere devotees, we can become bewildered. So the more your community has support for all the ashrams, the more you will see less of this reinventing the wheel. And of course, support is dependent on standards. Otherwise, what is there to support if there are no standards? So, one of the main successes. dealing with some devotees in another city in Australia. And the girl was daughter of devotees. And the young man was, he's also a devotee. So, somehow or other, the girl's parents thought it was quite appropriate that when the boy and girl were not married yet, were visiting the parents, they said, I'll just stay in the same room with our daughter. The devotees. So, when I found out about it, I said, look, because, I told the young man, because you are presenting yourself as a preacher, counselor in our Krishna conscious society, I have to say something. Ordinarily, I wouldn't say anything, but because you are wanting to guide others, you're wanting to counsel others, I have to point this out. This is not done. And the young man was surprised. Oh, you mean this is not done? I said, no, in civilized society, you know, this is not the way things work. He was genuinely surprised. Oh, okay, Guru, I got it now. This is how it is these days. And the girl's parents were actually allowed. Yeah, this is what's going on. Well, then later, I heard some feedback. Devotees were telling this young man, oh, your Guru Maharaj has very high standards. This is high standards? Very high standards.